Behind them, there was the sound of boots against marble and the door swinging open, his sister blinking as she stepped outside. "You're in better form than I thought you'd be." Anna frowned at him, using one booted foot to shove the cat inside so she could shut the door. "Why's that?"
"Because the amount of wine you must have consumed to have passed out at the table probably means my cellar's looking lean."
"Good God, did I?"
"If the chatter I heard coming from the kitchen is to be believed."
Arin stood from where he'd been sitting on the front step, tapping the end of his bow against his booted toe.
"Eli and Lara dragged you back to your room."
Passing a hand over her eyes, Anna shook her head as if to clear it. "I remember talking to her, and then..."
She shook her head again.
"Sorry, and sorry I'm late. I slept like the dead." So had he, which was strange, given it had been a clear night. Without a storm to guard Ithacana's shores, Arin normally tossed and turned half the night. He would have been late to rise himself if the damn cat hadn't woken him.
"Good morning, children."
Arin turned to see Jor appear through the mist, a bread roll he'd clearly filched from the kitchen in one hand. The older man gave Arin a once-over.
"You're looking awfully well-rested for a man who's just been married."
"I don't think he had much company last night, or any."
"Pissed the new wife off already?"
Arin ignored the question, a vision of Lara standing at the foot of his bed swimming across his thoughts, her naked body so damnably perfect that it had to have been a dream. The taste of her lips, the feel of her silken skin beneath his hands, the sound of her breath, ragged with desire. It had all been so vivid, but his memory stopped there. Definitely a dream. Pulling a folded sheet of paper out of his pocket, Arin handed it to Anna.
"Your marching orders for Southwatch."
She unfolded it, eyes running over the revised trade terms with Maradrina, brows furrowing with renewed annoyance.
"I'll walk down with you to the barracks," he said. "I need a runner to take Northwatch their copy. Maradrina's already sent buyers through the bridge with gold. They'll be wanting to get underway."
To Jor, he said, "Who's on watch?"
"Leah?"
"Good. Keep her here. I don't expect Lara to cause any trouble, but..."
Jor coughed.
"About Lara. Aster's here. He wants a word."
"He's at the barracks?"
"On the water."
"Of course he is." The commander of the Gestark garrison, south of Midwatch, was a member of the old guard. Appointed near the end of Arin's grandfather's life, his mother had spent nearly her entire reign looking for a legitimate reason to have him replaced, with no success. The old bastard clung to Ithacanian tradition like a barnacle to a boat, and Arin had not failed to notice that of all the watch commanders, Aster had been the only one who hadn't been at his wedding.
"I suppose we shouldn't keep him waiting."
The mist hung in the air like a great gray blanket, reducing the sun to a silver orb and making it impossible to see more than a few dozen paces in either direction. Down at the cove, Anna's bodyguard awaited her, as did his own, the men and women silently pushing their craft out into the water, Anna joining him in one of the midwatch vessels. The air was still, not a breeze to fill a sail, and the rattling of the chain rising from where it blocked the entrance to the cove felt like a vulgar violation of the silence. Paddles dipped in and out of the water as the group eased around hazards lurking only a few feet beneath the surface, moving out into the open and toward the hulking shadow of the bridge. "Arin?" Turning to look at his twin, Arin tracked her gaze to the water, where he caught sight of an enormous shape moving beneath them. The shark was longer than the boat he sat in, and more than capable of destroying it, should it feel inclined. But that wasn't why Anna had pointed the predator out. Its arrival heralded a calming of the tempest seas, and it wouldn't be long before Ithacana's waters were red with blood. His spine prickled, and Arin reached for a spyglass, panning their surroundings, his efforts yielding nothing but gray. a fine thing for hiding the comings and goings of his people, but it served their enemy just as well. It's weeks early. Nana hasn't called the end of the season yet. But for all Anna's words, he noticed her hand had drifted to the weapon belted at her waist, her eyes watchful. I need to get back to Southwatch. Through the mist, a pair of vessels appeared. Aster, always one for overt symbolism, having chosen to wait directly beneath the bridge.
Your Grace, the older man reached out to pull the two boats together. I'm relieved to see you well.
Were you expecting otherwise? The vessels rocked as his guards switched places with the commander, giving the three of them some semblance of privacy.
Given what you've brought into your house, yes.
She's little more than a girl, alone and at our mercy. I think I can handle myself.
Even a child can slip poison into a cup, and the Meridrinians are known for it.
Rest easy, Aster. My life is in no danger from Lara. Silas Veliant is no fool. He knows that having his daughter assassinate me would only cost him his new trade deal with Ithacana.
Lara, Aster spat into the water. I can hear in your voice that she's already digging in her claws. You must know there's a reason they sent a woman as beautiful as her.
How would you know what she looks like, Commander? Anna interrupted. I didn't see you at the wedding, though I suppose it's possible you were hiding in the back.
Auron bit down on his tongue. The Kestark commander was short for an Ithacanian, and he did not like to be reminded of it.
I've heard what she looks like. Aster's gaze was as dead-eyed as the sharks swimming beneath as he regarded them. I did not attend because I did not support your choice in taking her as your wife.
He wasn't alone in that. There were a great many, especially the older generation, who'd protested the union vehemently. Then why are you here now?
To give you some advice, Your Grace. Take the Meridrinian girl down to the water and drown her. Hold her under until you're well and sure she's dead, then feed her corpse to the sea.
For a moment, no one spoke. I'm not in the habit of murdering innocent women, Auron finally said.
Innocent? There's a word.
Aster scowled, casting his gaze up at the bridge above them before turning it back on Auron.
I forget how young you are, Your Grace. You were only a boy, kept safe in Arrenal the last time we went to war with Maradrina. You didn't fight in those battles where they threw their entire navy against us, blockading Southwatch and stymieing trade, all while our people starved. You weren't there when Silas Veliant realized that he couldn't win by force and took his vengeance on the outlying islands, his soldiers slaughtering families and stringing their bodies up for the birds to feast on.
Auron hadn't been old enough to fight, but that didn't mean he didn't remember how desperate his parents had been when they proposed the treaty to Maradrina and Harrendel. We've had 15 years of peace with them, Aster. 15 years of Silas not lifting a hand against Ithacana.
He's still the same man, and you've taken one of his progeny into your bed! I've taken you for many things, Auron Curtel, but not until now did I take you to be a fool.
Anna had a knife in her hand, but Auron gave her a warning shake of the head. He'd spent the past year being pushed and questioned by his watch commanders, and it would take more than a few insults to crack his temper. I know as well as anyone what sort of man Silas Veliant is, Commander. But this treaty has bought us peace and stability with Maradrina, and I will do nothing to jeopardize that. Auron waited for the other man to settle, and then continued. While the rest of the world moves forward, Ithacana languishes. Our only industry is the bridge and the fight to keep the bridge. We grow nothing. We create nothing. We know nothing but war and survival.
Our children grow up learning 100 ways to kill a man, but are barely literate enough to write their own names. And that's not good enough. Astor stared him down, having heard this speech before, but Arin would repeat it 1,000 times if that was what it took for men like Astor to accept the change that Ithacana needed. We need alliances, true alliances, alliances that go beyond pieces of paper signed by kings, alliances that will allow our people opportunities beyond the sword.
You're a dreamer, just like your mother was.
Astor lifted a hand, signaling to the other boats to return.
And it's a beautiful future you envision, I'll give you that, your grace. But it's not Ithacana's future.
The boats bumped together, and the commander jumped between them, settling himself among his guards.
And lest your dream turn into our nightmare, do us all a favor, your grace, and keep that woman locked up.
Lara slept better than she had in some time, in part due to the narcotics, and in part due to the silence. Her sleep during the journey through Moradrina had been constantly interrupted by ambient noise, soldiers, servants, horses, camels. But here, there were only the faint sounds of birds chirping in the courtyard trees. It was peaceful. But that sense of peacefulness was a cloak that hid the violent truth of this place, and the violent truth of herself. Dressing quietly, Laura ventured out in the direction of the dining room. She braced herself for the possibility that Arin would remember what happened in his room last night, that he'd realize she'd drugged him, and her mission would be over before it had even started. The table was loaded with trays of sliced fruits and meats, creamy yogurt, and tiny little pastries sprinkled with cinnamon and nutmeg. But her eyes were all for the view out the enormous windows. Though it was late morning, the sunlight was dimmed by a filter of clouds, making it no brighter than twilight. Yet it revealed what the darkness last night had hidden, the wild jungle, the trees soaring high, the foliage beneath so dense as to be impenetrable, all of it coated with mist. "Where is His Majesty?" she asked Eli, hoping he didn't notice the color that had risen on her cheeks. Circumstances had wrested free from her control last night, in more ways than one. The older servant woman gave Eli a sharp glance. "His Majesty is early to rise. He has gone with the commander to ensure the new trade terms with Moradrina have been conveyed to North and South Watch markets." Thank God. She wasn't sure if she was ready to be face to face with him, not after the things they'd done, whether he remembered them or not. Laura gave the woman a grave nod, hoping it hid her discomfort. "The new trade terms will be a godsend for my homeland. Only good can come from it." A shadow seemed to pass over the older servant's gaze, but she only inclined her head.
"As you say, my lady."
"What is your name? I've met Eli, and I should like to know the rest of you better."
"It's Clara, my lady. Eli is my nephew, and my sister, Morin, is the cook."
"Only you three?" Laura asked, recalling the legion of servants that had accompanied her party from the outskirts of the Red Desert to Ithacana. A slow smile worked its way onto Clara's face.
"His Majesty was in the habit of staying in the company of his soldiers rather than this house, though I expect your presence will change that, my lady."
There was a faint glint in the servant's eyes that made Lara's cheeks warm.
"Do you know when he will return?"
"He did not say, my lady."
"I see."
Laura allowed a hint of disappointment to enter her voice, satisfaction filling her as the woman's face softened, and she said,
"He is kept busy during most days, but his stomach will drive him home for dinner, if nothing else."
"Am I restricted in where I might go?"
"The house is yours, my lady. His Majesty requested that you make yourself comfortable."
"Thank you." Laura then left them to clear the table as she began her tour of the house. Besides her rooms and Auron's, there were four other bedrooms, the dining room, kitchen, and servants' quarters. The entire rear side of the home was filled with overstuffed chairs, a variety of games set on the tables, and walls lined with books. She longed to pick them up, but only trailed a finger along the spines before moving on. Every room was filled with windows, but the view was the same from them all. Jungle. Beautiful, but utterly devoid of civilization. Maybe this is what Ithacana is like, Laura thought. The bridge, the jungle, and little else. Or maybe that's just what they wanted her to think. Retreating to her rooms, she examined the selection of Ithacanian clothes in the closet, selecting a pair of trousers and a tunic that left her arms bare, as well as a pair of stiff leather boots, and then walked down the hall and out the front door of the house. Test your limits in a way that won't make them suspect your capabilities, Saren silently instructed. They expect you to be ignorant, helpless, and indulged. Capitalize upon their mistakes. Anticipating that she might be followed, Laura started walking. There was a path that led upward, but instead she chose to follow the spring, knowing that it would eventually deliver her to the sea. It was only a matter of minutes until she heard the faint tread of someone walking behind her, the crack of a branch, a soft splash of water. Whoever it was had a hunter's stealth, but she'd learned to tell the difference between sand shifting on the wind and that moving beneath a man's weight. So catching the errant sounds of pursuit in this jungle was nothing to her. Noting the signs of several booby traps in the jungle, Laura continued to follow the stream. Soon finding herself drenched with rain and sweat, the humidity of the air making her feel like she was breathing water. But still, she had caught sight of neither bridge nor beach, nor had her follower made any move to interfere. She rested a hand against a tree trunk and feigned weariness as she stared up, trying and failing to penetrate the canopy in the mist. Saren had explained in detail what they knew about the bridge. That the majority of the piers were natural towers of rock jutting out of the sea, holding the spans often 100 or 200 feet above the water. There were only a few islands onto which the bridge landed, and those were defended by all manner of hazards designed to sink ships. The most central of her goals was to find out how the Ithacanians accessed the bridge along its length, but she needed to find the thing first. The stream was flowing down an increasingly steep slope, the now cool water pouring over ledges in tiny waterfalls, filling the air with a gentle roar. Holding onto vines and bracing herself on rocks, Laura picked her way down, already dreading the pain of the climb back up. Then her boot slipped. The world turned sideways, a blur of green as she tumbled, her elbow knocking painfully against a rock. Then she was falling. Laura shrieked once, flailing her arms as she struggled to catch hold of a vine. She slammed into a pool of water, the force driving the wind out of her. Water closed over her head, bubbles streaming from her mouth as she kicked and thrashed her arms. Her boots knocked against the bottom, and she bent her knees to kick off, to find herself only waist deep. Bloody hell! Laura waded to the water's edge, but before she reached shore, a hiss caught her attention. Freezing where she stood, Laura scanned her surroundings, eyes landing on the brown and black snake shifting angrily in the underbrush. The creature was longer than she was tall, and it was caught between her and the cliff wall. She took a tentative step back into the water, but her motion only seemed to agitate the creature. This is what she got for not heeding Eli's warning. It took a great deal of self-control not to reach for one of the knives belted to her waist, her ears picking up the scuff of boots and a faintly muttered oath. Throwing knives were her specialty, but her follower was at the top of the cliff, and the last thing she needed was to be seen using one of her weapons. The snake reared up, its head eye level with her, hissing, angry, ready to strike. Laura breathed steadily, in and out. Come on, whoever you are, she silently grumbled. Deal with this creature already. The snake swayed from side to side, and Laura's nerve began to fray. Her hand closed over her knife, her finger clicking open the case around the hilt. The snake lunged. A bow twanged, a black fletched arrow spiking the creature's head to the ground. Its body thrashed about violently, then went still. Laura turned. Arin knelt on the edge of the waterfall she'd so gracelessly toppled off, bow in hand, a quiver full of arrows peeking over his broad shoulders. He straightened.
We have something of a snake problem in Ithacana. Not so bad on this island in particular, but...
He leapt off the edge, landing almost silently next to her.
If she'd sunk her teeth into you, you wouldn't have been long for this world.
Laura glanced at the dead snake, and its body twitched. Despite herself, she flinched, and she attempted to conceal the motion with a question.
How can you tell it's female?
Size. The males don't get this big.
Crouching, he jerked the arrow out of the animal's skull, wiping blood and bits of scale from the arrowhead, which was three-edged, unlike the barbed broadheads Maradrinians favored. He turned his gaze on Laura.
You were supposed to stay in the house.
She opened her mouth, about to tell him that she'd been given no such instruction, when he added,
Don't play the fool. You knew what Clara meant.
She chewed the inside of her cheek. I don't care for being confined. He snorted, then jammed the clean arrow back in his quiver.
I would have thought you'd be used to it.
I am used to it, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
You were kept locked up in that desert compound for your own safety. Consider my motivations for keeping you confined here the same. Ithacana is dangerous. For one, the entire island is booby-trapped, and two, you won't walk two paces without passing by some manner of creature capable of putting you in your grave. And three, a coddled little princess like you doesn't know the first thing about taking care of herself.
Laura ground her teeth together. It took every ounce of control in her body to keep from telling him just how wrong he was on that account.
That said, you did make it further than I expected you would.
Arin's eyes raked over her body, her soaking wet clothes clinging to her skin.
What did they have you and your sisters doing on that compound? Running laps and shoveling sand?
It was an inevitable question. While her frame was small, she was also corded with lean muscle from endless hours of training. Hers was not the body of most Maradrinian noblewomen. Desert living is hard, and my father wanted me prepared for the vigor of my life in Ithacana.
Ah,
he smiled.
How unfortunate that he didn't also prepare you for the wildlife.
Reaching up with his bow, he flicked the tip of it across her shoulder, and out of the corner of her eye, Laura watched a black shape sail through the air. A spider the size of her palm landed in the dirt before scuttling off into the shadows. She watched it with interest, wondering if it was poisonous.
No worse than the Red Desert scorpions?
Perhaps not, but I suspect the Red Desert isn't littered with these.
Picking up a rock, he tossed it a dozen paces to the left. There was a loud crack, and a board covered in wooden spikes snapped up from the ground. Anyone who triggered the device would find themselves sporting half a dozen holes in their body from the waist down. She'd seen the dew clinging to the tripwire a dozen paces back, but in fairness, it would have caught her in the dark.
You've won the pissing contest. Shall we carry on?
Instead of snapping back with a witty rejoinder, Arin stepped closer, his hand closing on her wrist. Laura should have recoiled, but instead she froze, remembering the feel of that hand on her naked body, the soft strokes up and down her thigh. She started to pull away, but he rotated her arm, frowning at the shallow cut on her elbow. Reaching into the pouch on his belt, he extracted a small tin of salve and a roll of bandage, and proceeded to tend to the injury with practiced hands. The muscles of his forearms flexed beneath the steel and leather of the greaves buckled around them. This close, she gained a new appreciation for how much larger he was than her, head and shoulders taller, and easily double her weight. All of it lean muscle. But Eric, her master of arms, had been just as big, and he'd trained Laura and her sisters how to fight against those who were larger and stronger. As Arryn finished bandaging her arm, she imagined where she would strike. To the arch of his foot or his knee, knife to open his guts, another to the throat before he had the chance to get a grip on her. He tied off the bandage.
I gave up a great deal in this exchange with your father, and all I got in return beyond the promise of continued peace was you. So you'll excuse me for not wanting to see you dead within the first days of your arrival.
And yet, you obviously were content to allow me to wander your dangerous jungles.
I wanted to see where you'd go.
Motioning for her to follow, Arryn moved through the deadfall covering the jungle floor, making minimal use of the glittering machete he held in one hand.
Were you trying to escape?
Escape to where? She forced herself to accept his arm as he guided her over a fallen tree.
My father would have me killed for dishonoring him if I returned to Maradrina,
and I possess no skills that would allow me to survive elsewhere on my own. Whether I will it or not, Ithacana is where I must remain.
At least you're honest.
Laura contained her own laughter. She was many things, but honest wasn't one of them.
Then what were you doing out here?
Save the lies for necessity.
I wanted to see the bridge. Arryn stopped in his tracks, turning to give her a sharp look.
Why?
She met his gaze unflinchingly. I wanted to see the bit of architecture that was worth the rights to my body, my loyalty, my life. He recoiled half a step as though she'd slapped him.
The rights to those things are yours to give, not your father's.
It wasn't what she'd expected him to say. But rather than easing her trepidation about that particular aspect of her mission, it made her skin burn hot with an anger that she couldn't quite explain. So she only gave a curt nod.
So you say.
Smacking a vine out of his way with the machete, Arryn strode up a steep incline, not waiting to see if she followed.
You were going the wrong direction, by the way. Now try to keep up. There's only a brief window in which you'll be able to see the bridge through the mist.
They climbed upward, mostly on a narrow trail, during which they said not a word to one another. There was nothing to be seen but endless jungle, and Laura was beginning to believe Arryn was toying with her, when he walked into a clearing containing a stone tower. Tilting her face to the sky, she let the endless rain wash the sweat from her face, watching the clouds twist and swirl on winds that didn't breach the tree canopy. Arryn gestured at the tower.
The break in the cloud cover will be brief at this time of year.
The tower smelled of earth and mildew, the stone stairs circling upward, worn in the center from countless footsteps. They reached the top, a small empty space open on all sides, revealing misty jungle in every direction. The lookout was at the apex of a small mountain, she realized, and she could only barely make out the gray sea below. There was no beach, no pier, and most importantly, no damned bridge.
Where is it? Patience.
Arryn leaned his elbow on the stone wall framing the space. More curious than annoyed, Laura went to stand next to him, taking in the trees and clouds and sea. But her attention was drawn to him. He smelled of damp leather and steel, of earth and leafy things. But beneath that, her nose picked up the smell of soap and something distinctly and not unpleasantly male. Then a blast of wind roared through the tower, chasing away all scents but that of sky and rain. The clouds parted with incredible speed, the sun burning down upon them with an intensity she hadn't felt since she'd left the desert, turning the swaths of faded green into an emerald so vibrant it almost hurt her eyes. The clouds raced away on the wind, leaving behind sapphire skies. Gone was the mysterious misty island, and what was left in its place was all brilliant color and light. But no matter how she searched, she could not see anything remotely resembling a bridge. An amused laugh filled her ears just as fingertips caught her chin, gently lifting her face.
Look further, Arryn said.
and Lara's eyes went to the now turquoise seas. What she saw took her breath away. All the descriptions given to her during her training paled in comparison to reality. It was not a bridge. It was the bridge, for there was nothing that compared with it in the world. Like a great gray serpent, the bridge meandered as far as the eye could see, joining the continents. It rested on top of naturally formed tower karsts that seemed to have been placed by the hand of God for just such a purpose, defying the tempest seas that crashed against their feet. Occasionally, its gray length drifted over the larger islands, resting on thick stone columns built by ancient hands. The bridge was a feat of architecture that defied reason, that defied logic, that should, by all rights, not even exist. Which was exactly why everyone wanted it. Tearing her eyes from the bridge, Lara glanced up at Arryn, whose own gaze was fixed on the stone structure. Though he must have seen it every day of his life, he still exuded a sense of wonder, as though he, too, could hardly fathom its existence. Before she could look away, he turned his head, and their eyes met. In the sunlight, she saw that his eyes were not black, but hazel, the brown flecked with emerald green that mirrored his kingdom.
Does seeing it bolster your sense of self-worth?
Her skin burned hot, and she turned away, needing to move. I am not a commodity.
That's not what I meant. The bridge, it's... For Ithacana, it's everything. And Ithacana is everything to me.
Just as Maradrina was everything to her.
It's impressive.
A weak word for the ancient structure.
Lara.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw him reach for her, then withdraw his hand as though he thought better of touching her.
I know that you didn't choose to be here.
He scrubbed a hand through his hair, his cheeks clenched as though he were struggling for words, and her heart began to pound, anticipating what he would say.
I want you to know that you don't have to do anything you don't want to, that this is whatever you want it to be, or don't want it to be.
What is it to you?
The treaty means peace between Ithacana and Maradrina. It means lives saved. Maybe one day it will mean the end to violence on our shores.
I didn't think we were talking about the treaty. She was intent on understanding what motivated this man, which included his desires. Arryn hesitated.
I hope our marriage will be the first step toward a future where my people's lives aren't tied to this ancient piece of stone.
The statement was so contradictory to what he'd said about the bridge being everything that Lara opened her mouth to ask for him to explain. But she was cut off by the sound of a horn blaring in the distance. It belted out a song, then repeated it twice. Arryn swore after the first pass, his hand reaching for the large spyglass, mounted at the center of the watchtower. He panned the water, unleashing a tirade of curses when he caught sight of whatever he was searching for. What is it?
Raiders.
He flung himself at the stairs, then caught himself on the doorframe, halting his progress.
Stay here, Lara. Just don't move. I'll send someone for you.
She started to argue, but he was already gone. Leaning over the edge of the tower, she watched him exit the base, sprint through the clearing, then disappear from sight. Standing on her tiptoes, Lara peered through the spyglass. It took her a moment, but she finally caught sight of the ship passing under the bridge toward midwatch, its deck teeming with armed men in uniforms, the Amaridian flag flying from the mast. A naval vessel, and not, if Arryn's words were to be believed, one that had come in peace. A loud crack split the air. Lara watched as a projectile tore through the rigging, a mast splintering and toppling sideways. It fell, sails and ropes catching on the metal spikes set into the base of one of the bridge piers. The ship keeled over, spilling countless men into the water. Another crack echoed up to her position, and a gaping hole appeared in the hull, a hole that swiftly disappeared as the vessel sank lower in the water. Hands frozen on the spyglass, Laura held her breath, as a violent barrage of ammunition methodically destroyed the ship, while those still aboard clambered higher or swam toward shore, fins circling them ominously, no safety within reach. As she watched, one of the sailors was jerked under, and her blood ran cold as a cloud of crimson blossomed where he'd been. After that, it was a frenzy, the sharks attacking one after another after another, the water now more red than blue. Moving the glass to where the island met the sea, she searched for any sign of Ithaconians, keen to see their defenses in action. But the angle was bad, the jungle obscuring her vision of whatever was happening at the water's edge. This could be her one chance to see how the Ithaconians repelled invaders from the inside, and she was missing it because of a poor vantage point. Laura found herself running down the stairs and into the clearing, her eyes trained on the path Arryn had taken, trusting it would lead her to where she needed to go. The jungle was nothing but a blur of green as she ran, the humid air heavy in her lungs as she leapt over rocks, slid in the mud, caught her balance, and kept going. The water wasn't far, and it was downhill. The path burst out into the open, cutting along the edge of a cliff. Far below, the ocean slammed against sheer rock. She veered around a bend, finding herself at the top of a steep slope. Laura paused, taking cover behind a rock. She spotted a cove that she hadn't been able to see from the watchtower. With a white sand beach and turquoise waters, it was hidden from the ocean by rocky cliffs, the opening to the sea beyond a gap barely wide enough for a small boat. The gap was currently blocked by a heavy chain connected to stone buildings on each side. The beach was full of soldiers. Lara's gaze went to the strange boat sitting on the sand, which showed no sign of going anywhere, before shifting her attention to the Ithaconians standing atop the cliffs overlooking the sea, Arryn's tall form among them. Frowning, Laura peered around the boulder, trying to determine where the catapult the Ithaconians had used against the ship was located, when she heard loose gravel sliding down the path behind her. Then a voice.
Hardly worth the stones we lobbed at them. A brisk wind would put that decrepit piece of shit on the bottom of the sea.
Her heart skipping, Laura searched for a way to escape, but the beach was crawling with soldiers. To her left was a tangle of jungle vines, and to her right was a sheer drop onto the jagged rocks jutting out of the ocean. The only way to keep from being caught spying was forward. Stepping out from her cover, Laura picked her way down the steep slope and onto the beach, ignoring the startled expressions of the soldiers. One man put his fingers to his lips and gave a sharp whistle, causing those standing on the cliffs, including Arryn, to turn. He was not so distant that she couldn't make out the surprise and subsequent irritation that crossed his face. Before the soldiers could stop her, Laura circled the cove, climbing the steps carved into the rock that allowed access to the cliff overlooking the sea. Arryn met her at the top, clearly not inclined to allow her to watch what was going on.
I told you to stay in the tower, Laura.
She pretended to lose her balance on the narrow step, hiding a smile as he caught hold of her arm, pulling her onto the clifftop and giving her an unencumbered view of the bridge and the ship sinking next to it. What's going on?
It's no concern of yours. Go down to the beach and someone will take you back up to the house.
He motioned to one of his soldiers, and Laura's mind raced, grasping for a reason to linger. There are drowning men out there. She waved away the soldier, trying to take her arm. Why aren't you helping them?
Those are raiders.
Arryn shoved the spyglass he was holding into her hand.
See the flag? That's an Amarid vessel. They were trying to find a way into the bridge under the cover of the fog.
They could be merchants.
They aren't. Look at the bridge. See the lines hanging from it?
Through the glass, Laura pretended to look at the men dangling from ropes, when really she was examining the structure itself, searching for openings. This was a vantage point no one but the Ithaconians had, and it was possible she might learn something valuable. But Arryn plucked the spyglass out of her hand before she could get more than a quick glance.
This is an act of war against us, Laura. They deserve what they get.
No one deserves this, she replied.
and though her reaction was an act, her stomach still twisted as the waves pummeled the ship, swallowing the wreckage whole. All the Amaridians were in the water now, some trying to reach the dangling ropes, others swimming in the direction of the island on which she stood. Help them!
No.
Then I will. She whirled around, keen to use a dramatic display of empathy to get a closer look at the small craft on the beach, only to find herself face to face with three of Arryn's soldiers.
Let me pass.
None of them moved, but neither did they reach for their weapons. Lara glanced over her shoulder, taking in the twin stone structures with solid doors and no windows, which guarded the mechanism for lifting the chain. She suspected they were always guarded. Yet her eyes were drawn from her assessment to the handful of sailors who, against all odds, were within reach of the gap leading to the cove. But several of them were floundering, the heavy waves washing over their heads.
Please.
Lara shouldn't care whether the Amaridians lived or died. But she found that she did, the shake in her voice genuine as she said,
"This is cruelty."
Arryn's face was dark with anger.
Cruelty is what those men would have done to my people if they'd managed to get past our defenses. Ithacana never asked for this. We never invade their lands. Never slaughter their children for sport.
He pointed his finger at the sailors, and bile rose in Laura's throat as another was jerked beneath the waves, the water frothing red as the shark tore him apart.
They brought war to us.
If you let them die, are you any better? There were only three sailors left, and they were close. Except Finns trailed in their wake.
Show some mercy. You want mercy?
Arryn twisted on his heel, reaching into his quiver even as he turned. Three blurs of black fletching, and the remaining sailors sank beneath the waves. He rotated back to face her, knuckles white where they gripped his bow. Lara dropped to her knees, closing her eyes and feigning distress, even as she sought her own inner focus. Ithacana was showing its true colors, not peaceful courtyards and soothing hot springs, but violence and cruelty. And Arryn was its master. But she would be his doom.
Wait for the winds to die, then pick off those hanging from the rock,
Arryn ordered his soldiers.
The last thing we need is one of them finding their way in at low tide.
Then Boots thudded past her, and he went down the steps to the hidden beach. Lara stayed where she was, smiling inwardly as the Ithacanians gave her and her moral outrage wide berth, even as she considered Arryn's words.
A way in at low tide.
A way into where? Was the question. Into the cove? Or had he been referring to a far greater prize? The winds died, the sun retreated behind another bank of clouds, and the rains returned, soaking her to the bone. But she did not move. In stoic silence, she watched the soldiers push the boats out into the water, sail beneath the bridge, and methodically shoot the sailors who'd managed to cling to the ropes through the entire ordeal, their lifeless bodies falling to the ocean below. She said nothing as they returned, only marked the meandering route they took, which was too purposeful to be without design. The necessity revealed, as the tides reversed, the waters trailing away to reveal the deadly traps beneath the surface. Steel spikes and jagged rocks, all intended to destroy any approaching vessel unaware of the correct path. The tide hit its lowest point, and Lara started to rise, convinced she'd seen all there was to see. Then a shadow at the base of the nearest bridge pier caught her attention. No, not a shadow. An opening. Her heart sped, and it was a struggle to keep her smile from her face as elation filled her. She'd found a way into the bridge.
Amarid's queen must truly be desperate to be crewing her ships with this sort.
Gorik flipped over the corpse that had been pulled from the ocean, blood seeping onto the white sand. It was missing a leg, courtesy of one of Ithacana's sharks. It was also missing its left thumb. But in that, the sharks were blameless, for the missing digit, combined with the brand on the back of his hand, indicated that this man had spent some time in one of Amarid's prisons for theft. Kneeling down, Arryn examined the dead soldier's threadbare uniform, the elbows worn through on both arms.
All convicts, you say? Those that we could get a look at?
Standing, Arryn frowned at the mist-covered waters of the cove. The Amaridian Navy was well acquainted with midwatches, shipbreakers, but the vessel had sailed right into their path, making them easy pickings. Perhaps an ancient ship with a crew of convicts had been all the Amarid Queen had been willing to risk on the tail end of storm season, but still, what was the point? Arryn turned back to Gorik.
Write a report and have it sent to the watch commanders informing them that raids have come early.
Then he strode up the path toward the barracks, having no interest whatsoever in returning to his house.
Wife chase you out already, your grace?
Jor was lounging next to the fire, a book in one hand.
She didn't seem too pleased with the Ithacanian form of mercy.
That she had not. Laura had sat and brooded on the cliff edge until he'd half wondered if he'd need to get someone to drag her back to the house. Then, abruptly, she'd risen, trotted down the steps to the beach, and stormed past him without a word, the guards he'd posted on her looking as though they'd rather be swimming with sharks than watching over their new queen. About an hour later, Eli had arrived with a letter written by Laura to her father, and now, Aster's comments fresh in his ears, Arryn was debating whether or not to send it.
I doubt she's seen much of the way of violence before.
Arryn headed toward his bunk before thinking better of it and sitting next to the old soldier.
Read this.
Taking Lara's letter, the older man read it, then shrugged.
Looks to me like a proof of life letter.
Arryn was inclined to agree. The letter said little more than that she was well, was being treated kindly, along with a lengthy description of his house, with a great emphasis on the hot spring. Even so, he'd read it over several times looking for code, not sure if he was happy or disappointed when he found none.
Interesting that she doesn't mention you. Methinks you have a cold bed in your future.
Arryn snorted, the blurry remnants of the dream he'd had of Lara in his room, in his bed, in his arms, flashing across his thoughts.
She seems to take issue with being a treaty prize. Maybe she was expecting a better-looking husband. Some people handle disappointment poorly.
Arryn lifted one eyebrow.
That's probably the only thing that hasn't been disappointing for her.
Jor shook his head.
Maybe she dislikes cocky little bastards. I've heard there are kingdoms where the people show a little respect for their monarchs. I can respect you and still think your shit stinks just as bad as the next man's.
Rolling his eyes, Arryn accepted the mug that Leah passed him, smiling until she said,
You're just pissed that the Rat King of Maradrina sent you a girl with an opinion rather than a brainless twit who'd...
She made a vulgar gesture.
Without question.
Like you, Leah?
Jor said with a wink, laughing as she tossed the contents of her cup at him. Arryn snatched the letter out of the man's hand before it could suffer any further damage.
You don't actually intend to send it, do you?
I told her I would, and besides, if Silas is wanting proof she's alive, it's best we satisfy him. The last thing we need is to give him an excuse to come looking for her.
Lie. We can get a forger to carry on the correspondence.
No. Arryn's eyes drifted across the lines of neat writing. I'll either send it or tell her that I chose not to. Is there anything on the surface here that we need to be worried about the magpie seeing? Jor took it back, reading it once more, and not for the first time, Arryn cursed having been born those few minutes before Anna. Those few damning minutes that made him king and her commander, when he'd have given anything for their roles to be reversed. He was suited to fighting, and for hunting, and for sitting around the fire making bad jokes with other soldiers. Not for politics and diplomacy and having his whole goddamned kingdom depending on his choices.
From the description of your fancy house, they might guess she's at midwatch with you. They'll realize from her details about the jungle that we're granting her some liberty to move about. Speaking of, Jor lifted his head, what was she doing running around the island? She came from the same direction as you, which wasn't from the house.
Chance would have it that Arryn had arrived at the house right before Lara departed on her unsanctioned exploration of the island, and rather than have Leah stop her, he decided to see where his wife intended to go. She was wandering.
Jor's eyebrows rose. For what purpose? Looking for the bridge?
All eyes in the common room turned to look at them, and Arryn scowled. It was mere curiosity. He didn't know exactly why he was defending Lara, only that the things she'd said to him had struck a chord. It had been so easy to focus on the sacrifices he was making as part of this marriage that he hadn't stopped to think of what it had cost her, of what it would continue to cost her. The exact same things he wanted to protect Anna from, and why he'd paid Herondale a fortune rather than force his sister into a marriage she didn't want. Nearly got herself bitten by a snake, so I expect she won't go wandering again anytime soon.
I wouldn't be so confident about that, Leah said. When we blocked her from the boats, she looked about ready to punch me in the face. She might not be a warrior, but she's no coward.
I'm inclined to agree. I'll have a couple extra guards stationed to keep an eye on her when you're not around.
Arryn nodded slowly. Send the letter through to Southwatch for Anna and our codebreakers to look at and get a forger to transcribe it onto fresh paper. Then send it to Maradrina. His people knew every one of the magpie's codes. If she was using one, they'd crack it.
You think she's a spy?
Exhaling a long breath, Arryn considered his new wife, who was nothing like how he'd expected. Maradrinian kings use their daughters as bargaining chips, ways to secure alliances and favors within the kingdom and without. Lara and all of her sisters would have been raised knowing an arranged marriage to him, or someone else, was part of their future. They'd have been trained to do their duty as a wife, regardless of the circumstances. Yet Lara had made it clear that the treaty secured her presence in Ithacana, not her compliance as a wife, and he respected that. Every woman who'd shared his bed had done so because she'd wanted to, and the idea of spending his life with a woman who was there solely out of duty was unappealing. He'd prefer a cold bed.
I'll give her some space. I think if she's been sent here to spy, she's going to come to me in pursuit of information. Maradrinians aren't known for their patience. And if she does?
Jor asked.
I'll cross that bridge when it comes. And if she doesn't?
In a way, if Lara was, in fact, an innocent girl who'd been sent to secure a peace treaty, it made Arryn's task harder than if they exposed her as a spy, because he had his own agenda when it came to his Maradrinian wife, and he wouldn't get very far with it if she hated his guts.
I'll win her over, I suppose.
Leah's drink sprayed out from between her lips.
Good luck with that, Your Grace.
He gave her a lazy smile.
I won you over.
Leah gave him a look that implied he was the stupidest creature to walk the earth.
She and I are not the same.
Yet it wasn't until Lara had continued to give him the cold shoulder for one night, then a week, then two, that he started to think that maybe Leah had been right.
The weeks after the shipwreck and the slaughter on the beach passed without incident. Arryn rose at dawn and didn't return until late in the evening, but he didn't leave her unattended. Wise to Lara's prior unsanctioned exploration of the island, the servants kept close watch on her, Clara always seeming to be dusting or mopping nearby, the scent of wood polish perpetually thick on the nose. Though in truth, the storms that passed overhead did more than the servants or guards ever could to keep Lara contained. Violent winds, lightning, and a ceaseless deluge of rain were regular occurrences. Morin, the cook, told her these were the last gasps of the season, and nothing in comparison to the typhoons she'd witnessed when the next began. Though she was desperate to get another look at the opening into the pier, Laura, by design, did nothing to provoke interest, using the time to discreetly search the home for any clues that might assist in planning Maradrina's invasion of Ithacana. Maps were her primary goal, and the one thing she failed to find. Saren had countless documents detailing the islands that made up the kingdom, on which a long line depicting the bridge was always drawn, but none with any detail. Laura had now seen for herself. The kingdom was nearly impossible to infiltrate due to the lack of beaches, compounded by the defenses in the water, which the Ithacanians seemed capable of shifting and changing at will. The other mystery was where the islanders themselves resided. No civilizations of size had ever been spotted from the sea, and successful landings and raids only spoke of small villages, leading Saren and her father both to believe the population small, violent, and uncivilized, dedicated to basic needs, vicious defense of their bridge, and little else. But though she'd only been in Ithacana a short time, Laura was not inclined to agree with that assessment. It was what Auron had said to her in the tower. The bridge. For Ithacana, it's everything. And Ithacana is everything to me. The tone in his voice showed genuine sentiment. There were civilians here. Civilians Auron believed needed protection. And all of her training told her they would be Ithacana's greatest weakness. She need only determine where they were and how to exploit that knowledge, then pass it back to Maradrina. She'd sent her first letter to her father already, a code-free missive carefully crafted to ensure it gave no reason for the Ithacanians to detain it. A test, to see if Auron would allow her to correspond, before she attempted the riskier task of trying to get intel past the codebreakers at Southwatch. Proof that Auron had been true to his word came in a response from her father, and the letter was delivered by none other than King Auron himself. She'd seen him arriving home through the window, soaking wet from the most recent downpour, and not for the first time she wondered what it was he did during his days. More often than not, he returned wet, muddy, and smelling of sweat, his face shadowed with weariness. Part of her had wanted to approach him, had feared that she'd aired her strategy of gaining his trust and alienated him entirely. But another part had told her that she'd made the right choice in forcing him to come to her. "This arrived in Southwatch for you." He dropped the folded pieces of paper in her lap. He was bathed and changed into dry clothes now, but the exhaustion lingered. "You read it, I assume?" She unfolded the letter, noting Saren's spidery imitation of her father's script and feeling the faintest stab of disappointment. Of course it had been him to write it. He knew the codes, not her father. She set it aside, not wanting to read it just yet.
"You know I did, and to save you the trouble, my codebreakers helpfully translated the piss-poor code. Transcription is on the back. I'll let the deception slide this time, because it didn't come from you. But there won't be any second chances."
So much for Mary Lynn's unbreakable code. Flipping over the page, she read aloud, "Relieved that you are well, dearest daughter. Send word if you are mistreated, and we will retaliate." Auron snorted. "What did you expect? That he'd marry me off to you and not care what became of me?"
"More or less. He got what he wanted."
"Well, now you know otherwise." And now she knew that getting information out of Ithacana would be just as challenging as predicted. "Perhaps you might send him a letter yourself, reassuring him of your good intentions."
"I don't have time for carrying on a casual correspondence with your father, or..."
He picked up the letter.
"The Magpie, judging from the penmanship."
Bloody hell, the Ithacanians were good. Laura averted her gaze. "Your time is clearly precious. Please do carry on with whatever it is you need to do. He started to turn, then hesitated, and from the corner of her eye, she watched him catch sight of the deck of cards she'd left sitting on the table.
You play.
A mix of nerves and excitement filled her.